On today's episode of The Good Word, Dan Titus joins us to discuss why Big Slim is the obvious number one pick in fantasy basketball drafts, which players are we buying or selling future shares on, and we tell you which teams we think will and won't make it to the conference finals this season. All that and more coming up right now.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. Might not be saying that too much longer, but you'll hear about that fairly soon. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we are joined by Dan Titus. He's the fantasy basketball expert here at Yahoo Sports, and he's a little bit similar to me because he's 39.
Not what you thought.
He's 39. Happy belated birthday, my man. We got to start off there. I'm glad you were able to get yourself going here this afternoon, man. What's going on?
I'm doing good, man. Appreciate the birthday wishes. And yeah, man, we're approaching that cusp of that, you know, over the hill status. But I feel young, man. I just came back from a Anderson .Paak concert over the weekend, and I saw the Lox. So I got them young vibes, man. I'm feeling good. And yeah, I mean, now we got media day, so the hoops is actually coming back. I appreciate the break, but it's time to go to work.
Yeah, I could take more of a break. Like, you can get back to work. I've reached a stage of life where I value the time where I can just sort of chill. Like you just said, the Lox. And that don't sound like no fun time. You know what I mean? Like, the Lox at a concert, that's like going to see M.O.P. or something like that. Like, you got to watch your back and your front. You know what I'm saying? I get it, though.
We celebrate 30 years of the Trinity here. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the best rap group ever created. The ones that never had any beef, have always stayed together, still did their own solo acts, and still can bring it back 30 years later, even amid all of the other stuff that helped them get into the game and avoid all that. Like, come on, man.
Who's your favorite rapper? Does Outkast count as a group?
I mean, yeah, they're early catalog for sure. But, I mean, what did Andre do by himself? What did Big Boy do by himself? They need each other.
Spit fire? Like, what are you talking about?
Versus? But, like, Andre 3000, let's get, all right. Andre 3000 is one of the best lyricists when he actually tries to rap. But we don't get anything from him. Like, what? It was like the Kendrick thing. Like, when's he coming out? And now he's coming out with a flute. I'm good. He's a great musician. No, give him all the credit in the world, but they're not better than the Lox.
I mean, Big Boy actually is pretty underrated as a rapper. He can rap his ass off.
What's the name of his album?
Don't matter. He can rap his ass off. I don't care.
He can. I love Outkast. They're my second favorite group. So, yeah.
Yeah. We're going to have a little discussion off to the side of this. You know what I mean? We're going to have a discussion off to the side of this. Yeah. You know, when you get a little more experience and more age, you know, I'll learn you something. You know what I mean? But then, of course, you know, fantasy basketball season is about to be upon us in a little bit. Of course, we know that's why you're here. Last year's number one pick, of course, was fairly obvious. He wound up winning his third MVP in 4 years. Stat stuffer, Nikola Jokic. Is he still the number one fantasy guy that you got this year? Or is my guy Big Slim the guy that we're going to take first this year?
We got to go with Big Slim. And I know, like, it's actually a pretty good debate because you really can't go wrong with either one. You get a triple-double every night with Nikola Jokic. You know what you're getting. But with Victor Wembanyama, you're getting this insane ceiling that we haven't even seen yet. If you look at his numbers, he put up the second best numbers as a rookie ever to David Robinson in fantasy. And when you combine the fact that he can give you 20 points a game, he shoots threes, and he's getting 10 rebounds with four stocks, I mean, this guy is going to break fantasy. He's a cheat code. And at this point, you got to get him as their number one pick because dude played 70 games. My concern with him last year was, like, I thought Pop was going to handle him with kid gloves. He didn't. He kind of just brought him along slow. And then when he unleashed him as the five, it was a wrap. And then I saw enough. Like, this guy is the best player in fantasy right now. And if you can get a guy that can give you three-pointers, 20 points a game, and has the defensive chops of Hakeem Olajuwon and David Robinson, no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're going to go over some of your sleepers, some of your breakout players, and some of the guys that you think might be fading a little bit. But before we get there, I want to go into, because you just said something really interesting about basically his trajectory going only up from a number standpoint, like wherever he finishes the second half of the season, you think of that as the starting point
right.
for the next season. The guy gets around the league more than once. He sees teams, he sees coverages, he adjusts. Then they're going to adjust to him. So I'm very curious how that's going to play out for him. Just from a numbers standpoint, I think the effect is still going to be there. I wonder if he's going to play the same position with the personnel that they have, especially with Chris Paul being there. But give me your, as we move forward into the season, as we head towards draft season, give me your top 12 fantasy basketball picks headed into the year.
So number one, I'm going to go with Victor Wembanyama. Number two, Nikola Jokic. Number three, Luka Doncic. Number four, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Number five, this is where things get a little bit weird. I'm going Joel Embiid, but I'll talk a little bit about him later. It's a risk, but I think when this guy plays on the court and he's healthy, he is the top three option in fantasy. Number six, I'm going to go with Anthony Davis. Number seven, I'm going Giannis Antetokounmpo. Number eight, Tyrese Halliburton. Number nine, going to have to go with Trae Young. Number 10, Steph Curry. 11, Anthony Edwards. And 12, I feel like I'm forgetting a name. It might have to be James Harden, because I think he's going to be in for a big season after what we just heard from LA Clippers Media Day. He's going to have a pretty heavy workload. So those are my top 12 right now.
Yeah, we're going to get into a little bit of that Kawhi Leonard stuff that you just alluded to there. You just talked about Joel Embiid when he plays. And then you said the next name was Anthony Davis. If that ain't in all of the contradictions, like, is that something that you believe? Because we all know when Anthony Davis plays and he's healthy, you're like, oh, yeah, he puts up production. And another one that I think you mentioned that was a little surprising, but I get it, was Tyrese Halliburton. From a health standpoint last year, we got to see on the second half of that season, it was not as effective as the first half, as he dealt with that hamstring injury that sort of lingered on for the rest of the way. You don't have those same injury concerns for those two guys that you do for Joel Embiid?
I 100% have injury concerns for Anthony Davis. Not as concerning as Joel Embiid, though. I mean, I think the way that Anthony Davis right now and the way that the Lakers constructed their roster, yet again, didn't really do much. They're going to be solely dependent on him and LeBron, which is probably going to be a bad thing that could break him. But last year, when you have these protocols set up into these contracts and these players having to play through injuries to get their All-NBAs and to get their that extra little kicker in their contracts, I think they're going to try to gut it out. And again, like, Father Time could be right around the corner for LeBron. We don't know how much time is left. So I think that the Anthony Davis situation is more about just the dependency and what he's able to do on the court when he's healthy. You're still probably going to get those alerts on your phone that he went to the locker room every freaking game. But at that point, you're still going to get some dope production. So I think you got to rank him that high just for what his ceiling is. Tyrese Halliburton, I feel like it's a one-off, but you're right. Like, I think there is some concern about his injuries, that ankle injury he was playing through, obviously, for his next contract too. You also have to add in the fact that Pascal Siakam came over. That took over some of his usage a little bit and how the Indiana Pacers run their offense and who they run it through. So I think there is a bit of pause there, but there's few players in the NBA right now that can average 20 points, 10 assists, and do it efficiently. And Tyrese Halliburton's one of those guys.
Yeah. Now going to your breakout players, like, I see the list, and it's a couple ones that's like real interesting here. Like I want you, do you want to just go through them and name them, or do you want me to just pluck out a name and ask you?
Yeah. See what piqued your interest there. What names?
Well, we have it set up in guards, forwards, and centers. So among the guards, Jalen Suggs is a guy that is interesting to me because he is like one of those five-tool players that can do a bunch of different things. My question is he going to play enough, and is he going to be able to score enough to make it worth your while?
So that's why I have him in the breakout category, because I think this year the Orlando Magic signaled clearly that they're trusting Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner to really run the offense through them. But I think as an alternative action that's actually pretty important is that they didn't replace the point guard. It's going to be Jalen Suggs' job. If you look at his rookie year, he averaged the most assists in his rookie season, and he played most of his minutes at point guard his rookie season. And I think what we saw in year two was a really big, substantial growth in his game. He wasn't able to shoot when he came in the league. He shot nearly 40% from three. When you have the ability to do catch and shoot playing off of Paolo and Franz Wagner, I think his points are going to go up. And when you look at the usage opportunity with the ball in his hands more, he's going to get those potential assists to go up as well. So I think the breakout that I'm predicting is really centered around he's going to have more usage, more minutes. I think he's going to play at least 30 minutes a night. You bring in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to really shore up that defense. This is just going to be a better team. When you have a better team with a young guy running their offense, I think this is going to be the best season that he's had in his career, really because of the opportunity and the ball being in his hands way more than it was before. So, yeah, I'm pretty high on Jalen Suggs, and I think the betting market is too. He's definitely one of the odds-on favorites for most improved player, which I think is a pretty good indicator of, like, what's next for certain players.
Yeah, and as I look at this list, I noticed that there's a certain commonality amongst names on this list. We should thank Jalen Rose for this. Or we should thank his mom, Jeannie Rose, for coming up with the name Jalen. Because we got a bunch of Jalens here. And amongst the forwards, of course, we got Jalen Williams. You have Jalen Williams, Jalen Johnson, Franz Wagner. Jalen Johnson is an interesting one for me in Atlanta.
Yeah, the Atlanta Hawks, I feel like, are in this weird spot of, like, they're not really trying to win, but they got to appease their star player to win. Mm-hmm. I don't know how Zach Richesche is going to really fit into this, but what I do know is that Jalen Johnson showed us enough in 56 games last year to be the second option on this team. With DeJounte Murray out, he displayed a unique ability to playmake. Despite only having a 20% usage rate, he averaged over 3.5 assists. There's only 9 players in the league that did that as a big man. And so if you look at his efficiency, he's kind of like John Collins, but I think he's a little bit more dynamic in terms of his athleticism. This man can score in transition. He's got a nice jumper. The free throws might be a little bit of struggle, but he improved in 8 of the 9 categories that fantasy tracks last year. So this just screams breakout to me. He already kind of broke out last year. He was 48th in per game value, which means he averaged the 48th most fantasy points, even though he played only 56 games. So I think the concern around him is the injuries. Can he stay healthy and really go through an 82-game season? But I think all signs are pointing up, especially because of his role and what he's going to play for this Atlanta Hawks team.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I'm fascinated by Jalen Johnson, like you said, just by the sheer sort of crossroads the Hawks franchise is at, with the first draft pick, with Trae Young being on the clock, with no more DeJounte Murray. It's going to be a lot more playmaking available to be open. And you don't want Trae Young having even as high of a usage rate as he had playing next to DeJounte Murray. You want to scale that down just a little bit. Going to see how that works. Centers, more Jalens. Jalen Duren in my backyard in Detroit, and Jalen Smith. Now,
I did not realize how many Jalens I put on this list, for real. Like, I wasn't even paying attention to that. But, shout out to Derek, to Jalen Rose, his mom. That's cool.
So yeah, it's one of those things. I kept looking like, man, we got Jalen. You know what I mean? It was almost like this show that we can't really watch anymore because the person is locked up. But there was this rapper, and you kept asking him his 5 favorite rappers, and he was like, Jalen, because I spit that hot fire, yo. We can't actually say his name because we can't say the name of the dude because that dude is in the Brooklyn Correctional Facility or something like that, and he's with one of those FTX dudes as his cellmate.
FTX.
And that's what he was, right? Like scam artists or something, right? Yeah. Right? Am I wrong?
I literally just watched that Chappelle skit the other day. That's funny as hell that you say that.
We won't be allowed to have anything. By the time all this is over, we'll have no music. We already had to give up R. Kelly, right? Yeah. Now we're going to have to give up, which wasn't as terribly difficult as I thought it was going
to be.
That's a discussion point.
Nope, can't do it here.
Yes, we can't do it here. Can't do it here. Nope.
I don't imagine you Harlem shaking, so I think you're good on letting the other guy go, right?
Oh, no. I ain't no Harlem. Look, I'm from Detroit. I ain't dressed in no shiny suit or nothing like that. Harlem shaking in the rain. What I look like? Nah. Jalen Duren and Jalen Smith. What do we got with them?
So with Jalen Duren, for me, man, like Philly raised, like hard-nosed basketball player. But I think now, and I think you know this as being that Detroit's right there for you, the coaching change to me was just significant enough that, like, I think we're going to see the pendulum swing of Detroit being the laughingstock of the league to being an actually serious team. They went out, got Tobias Harris. I think all of the pieces that they're kind of putting together kind of just fit a little bit better. And now with some competency in the room and some actual opportunity for Jalen Duren to emerge, I think we're going to see an uptick in his playmaking now that he has a couple, you know, good scores around him. If he ever gets pinned down in the paint. He can kick it out. He's actually got competent three-point shooters out there, and Malik Beasley, Tim Hardaway Jr., if they actually get on the court. But really, it's about, for me, the efficiency that he shows as a young rookie, like this guy, or as a young player, not even 23 years old yet. And you've already seen he's a double-double threat, 14 points, 12 rebounds. He shot 79% from the line last year, which is pretty significant leap from a rookie season to the second year. So there's just so much growth and opportunity for him as the center. And I think Isaiah Stewart will kind of see him start to fade. They brought in Paul Reed, but like he's not a threat. So I think this is going to be the breakout campaign where we really see that Jalen Duren is really a Dwight Howard light. And I think the way that he can do that is by trying to block more shots. And I think he's going to be more active defensively this year. So I think we're going to see that boost in stocks. He'll become a top 50 player easily this year.
He's got great hands. Like, that's the crazy thing. He's got great hands. I think that was one of the things that was kind of disappointing last year, was whether it was the effort to stay out of foul trouble, whether it was the ankle injury that he seemed to have and couldn't really shake. He wasn't going for a lot of block shots. Like, the comparison that I'd always heard from seeing him as an 18-year-old was Chris Webber. You know what I mean? Like, when they said the hands, the athleticism, like maybe not the handle. Like, Webber had a crazy handle.
You know,
not just for a big man. Webb had a handle. That's the thing I don't necessarily see. I do think the playmaking is going to improve. Like you said, if the rebounding, the shot blocking goes up, I think that makes him far more valuable. Now, you got a couple sleepers here. You have more similar named sleepers, shall we say. So you want to go with the Thompson twins?
Yeah, let's talk about some Thompson twins, man. I love Amen Thompson really because of what he did on a per-minute basis last year. And Houston's is in such an interesting position because I've never seen a team have such a depth problem. Like, I don't know what moves they're going to have to make, but they're going to have to do it because Amen Thompson needs to be on the court. His playmaking, his rebounding at the position, I could say the same for Asar too. Like, these guys are extremely good rebounders for their size on the wing. But then the playmaking that they have, and like, if you just go back and just look at the highlights of their touch around the rim, I mean, the way that these guys finish with their off hands is just so beautiful. It's unlocked talent that needs to be on the court. And the struggle is real with their shooting. But I think we saw some improvements. At least I've been watching in the offseason. Their stroke looks a little bit more fluid. Whether that's going to prove out in a game, we'll see. I think that's the one thing that's keeping them both off the court. But I think Asar Thompson is in line to start at the small forward spot from everything that I'm reading right now. And Amen Thompson is just an injury away. So if Jalen Green comes out slow like he has in the past, shout out to another Jalen, we see Ime Udoka make a drastic change, because I think that the clock is definitely on in Houston. Like, Ime Udoka has goals and aspirations that make this team a playoff team. And, you know, they have the talent to do it. And Amen Thompson on the court definitely changes the landscape a little bit. So he's going pretty, both Thompson twins are going after picks 120. So he's a late round flyer that I would absolutely love on my team just based on what he can do, what they both can do on a permanent basis if given the opportunity.
Yeah, you mentioned Jalen Green. Remember, he doesn't have an extension. Alperen Sengun does not have an extension in that draft class. Interesting things to watch as far as, hey, what is their future going to be like in Houston, and how does that affect someone like Amen Thompson? So with the risers, we got to worry about some guys who may be fading, and interesting archetypes, like two names that are interesting archetypes on this list. I'm going to let you introduce them because I don't want to be seen saying the names because I don't want Canada on my ass.
This is our Jimmy Butler moment of last year. And I told people to fade him, and Jimmy wasn't as good as he was the previous year. For me, it's Jamal Murray. And I think it's more about what I've just seen lately, you know, coming off of his worst playoff performance and a Paris Olympics appearance that just really didn't work out. He just didn't look healthy. They signed him to a lucrative extension right now, and they had to do it. Like, for what we've seen on the tape, on the film, and what he's provided in the past, like, it's a no-brainer decision. My problem is like, I still know that he's fully healthy, and it may take some time for him to get back to who he was. Right now, he's carrying a fourth-round ADP. That's an average draft position. That's a pretty sizable investment for someone that's looked as injury-plagued as he has recently. So, in my opinion, and now you also have Russell Westbrook coming in here, not saying that he's going to make this substantial impact, but when Russ comes on the court, he does things, and I don't know if he's going to start yet. It might be Christian Brown. We'll see how, they try to work that rotation. But I think it's definitely a bit concerning for Jamal, just where he's at in his rehabilitation, coming back off these injuries that, you know, didn't have any surgeries. It seems like it's like a rest and getting your confidence back type of thing. I don't think he has it. So I'm not gonna invest a fourth round pick in him. The next guy is CJ McCollum. And CJ had one of his best seasons of recent years. And I think it's because he was running point guard. Well, now you have DeJounte Murray there, and they paid a pretty penny for him. There's just not a lot of uses to go around on this Pelicans roster, and it's a bit concerning because, like, you know, they can't move Brandon Ingram. You know, you got to try to get up his trade value so someone will actually want to take him off your hands, because you got to free Trey Murphy and Herb Jones. So I don't know. I think that someone's going to get squeezed here, and I think CJ McCollum might actually be their best option off the bench as a sixth man. They haven't announced that yet, but defensively, I mean, you got to put Herb Jones and or Trey Murphy in there, and then their ability to stretch the floor, they're more efficient from the field. I think it would actually be a good move for them to move McCollum to the bench. And if they did, obviously that's going to hamper his fantasy value because he's not going to be seeing as many minutes. Maybe he runs the second offense, you know, but if he's stuck in there with the starters, I just see the production going down.
No, that makes perfect sense. They got a cluster over there in New Orleans, and they got to figure out the numbers game to figure out, like you said, to make more room for guys like Herb Jones, who I'm very, very, very high on. But we're going to pause for a moment, pay some bills, and we'll be right back with Dan Titus on more of The Good Word. Back on today's episode of The Good Word with Dan Titus. Dan, of course, we got some buyers and some sellers. I got a few names here that producer John is putting the rundown that I'm very curious about myself. So you're going to tell me when I give you the name if you are buying their future production or you are selling. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Number one, I feel like this should be an easy one. This should be an easy one. John just threw you like a 70-mile-an-hour fastball in the middle that you should just crush. The fun guy, Kawhi Leonard, who it was just announced yesterday that he underwent a knee procedure. Of course, surprise, surprise, coming off of what we saw during the Olympics, warm-up to the Olympics, where he was on a roster. You didn't really see him play. The announcement that he wasn't playing, there was a lot of controversy and everything else. Of course he had a procedure. Of course nobody said anything about it. Of course he was laboring during that process, in all likelihood because he had a knee procedure and nobody knew about it. Discussion for another day, but let's just go with Kawhi Leonard, who played, I believe, like 72 games last year. It kind of went under talked about because he missed everything going into the playoffs and didn't look good. Are you buying or selling Kawhi Leonard this season?
I mean, you got to sell him at this point. Anything related to a knee injury with Kawhi Leonard, Joel Embiid, there's a list of them. It's concerning. And right now, Kawhi Leonard's ADP was already falling a little bit, but I think now it might drop into the fourth and fifth round. I think there's a point where I'd be like, all right, it's worth the risk, because the timeline that they provided, they just said they don't know whether he's going to be ready for the regular season. He could be ready by, you know, November. I'm cool with Kawhi Leonard. But this is also going to be an injury management thing that's probably going to continue and fester throughout the regular season here. This is a pattern we've seen with Kawhi Leonard before. I'm concerned. Steve Ballmer just opened up that brand new facility, and you got your number one guy already on the shelf. Not a good look.
Paul George knew something. Like it that's a, let's just say, it's a discussion we can have here on another day, but Paul George knew something. Now, next, yeah. Paul George's teammate, Mr. Joel Embiid, who just signed a 3-year, almost $200 million extension with the 76ers, going to quiet a lot of that noise. He had the injury problems going into that first-round playoff series against the Knicks, but still balled, reasonably speaking. How do you see him? You buying or selling?
I'm buying, and I think it's actually for what you said. Getting a 3-and-D, one of the best 3-and-D wings in the game in Paul George, to now be in that starting lineup can now reduce some of the load that Joel thinks, I guess, is on his back all the time. The one problem that I have with Joel Embiid is that he does too much. Now he's in a position where he can hang out in the post, get those easy middies that he's so good at. He doesn't need to do these Euro step, you know, going through the lane, getting fouled, and doing all the extra stuff. Like, that's... Bruh, you're old, you're injury prone. Now's the time to take a step back, still do your thing. You'll still see a 30% usage rate. Just let Tyrese Maxey and Paul George go to work as well. This is going to be a good thing for the Sixers. It's going to be a great thing for Joel Embiid. And I think now people are going to get him at a slight discount. He's going number 8 in fantasy drafts, which I think he should easily be a number 5 pick based off what we've seen in the past. So it's only going to go up for Joel Embiid. Hopefully he can play more than 65 games.
Sneakily, y'all, this is year 11 for Joel Embiid. Now, granted, he missed a couple of those years with the back injury and everything else. But since he's been in the league, I believe this is year 11. I believe this is the 14. Was it the 14 draft or the 15 draft?
I think you're right. I think it was 14.
Okay. All right. It's funny. I can name a draft from 1994, but once I get past a certain year, like they just all start blending together, I feel like I'm so old. Now, somebody else whose body is old, Kristaps Porzingis. He says he's targeting a December return date from ankle surgery. You saw him laboring around during the finals. Celtics really didn't actually need him, but where do you see him buying or selling?
He's already fallen to like the 8th, 9th round of fantasy drafts. And I'd be okay waiting until around, you know what I'm saying, like round 9 to get him, because while they're optimistic about this December timeline, I saw a couple of videos of him shooting in the gym on one leg. I'm not convinced that they're going to bring him back and just give him 30 minutes, right? This is going to be a process. It's going to be a ramp up process. We may not see him actually play to the level and expectation that fantasy managers need until like February. And so if that's the case, why would you invest, like, go get a healthy guy that can contribute from, you know, October to February? It's a draft and stash for me. I understand it if you are looking for some value late that you think can pop off at the end of the season. But I'd probably avoid it altogether because, KP is not really not realistically playing like KP ball until at least the All-Star break.
Now we've reached, ladies and gentlemen, the segment of the program. The segment of the summer and fall where we bring you special reports from the gym. Now, when I say the gym, I mean the summer workouts that, you know, some of these trainers have, and they post all these videos of guys like not missing a jump shot. They don't miss a jump shot in the summer, right? I'm just presumably happy to see Ben Simmons taking a jump shot. I don't know if that means anything, but he's taking a jump shot. It says he's fully recovered from back surgery. It says he's ready for Nets training camp. Yes, strain that violin. Are you buying or selling on Ben Simmons?
I'm out. I mean, granted, at the cost, it's not going to cost you much, but either way, you won't find me drafting him this year. I just don't believe it. At this point, I don't know if it's a Brooklyn thing. Maybe he doesn't feel supported by them. I don't know what it is. He's just not going to play for a majority of the season. He might play for a portion of it and you might get something out of it, but there's nothing reliable about Ben Simmons. And if you're playing a season long game, it's just very hard to trust someone that's not shown anything in terms of his ability to be healthy, play through injury. And whether his back injury was, you know, significant enough to keep him out this long, that's not for me to know. All I know is that, like, everything I'm seeing from the Brooklyn Nets is the investment in Cam Thomas and Nick Claxton. That's what they're going with. Everybody else is probably tradable or expendable. So if you're investing in the Brooklyn Nets, I would pay more attention to Cam Thomas and Nick Claxton. Avoid Ben Simmons.
You said they're investing in Cam Thomas and Nick Claxton. They're invested in Cooper Flagg. That's what they're invested in, y'all.
Facts.
They would sign that man to an NIL deal today if they could. Yeah. Now, last one, and I feel like this is kind of a cheat, because Mitchell Robinson has just been announced that, again, he's injured. He'll miss the start of the regular season after offseason ankle surgery. He has the ankles. He had the bad hand, bad wrist a couple of years ago. Where do you sit on him? Are you buying or selling Mitchell Robinson?
This is just tough, man. I got to sell it because at this point, like, another person you just can't trust in fantasy. When he's on the court, though, very impactful defender, one of the best rim protectors they have in the game, offensive rebounding as well. And at this point, you just can't. I don't. When are we going to get Mitchell back? And same thing. Like, I just don't know that you can just throw him in there and get 30 minutes. He wasn't even going to be a 30 minutes guy anyway. He's probably more of a 20 minute guy. So if you need blocks late, sure, you can do a draft and stash. But I'd probably be out on Mitchell Robinson, too. I'd be much more interested in taking like a Trayce Jackson-Davis. you know, Walker Kessler, just a young big man. But to that point of Mitchell Robinson's absence, I wanted to get your thoughts on what do you think the Knicks are going to do? I think the obvious thing is like, oh, you could play Julius Randle more at center. Maybe you play Precious Achiuwa. Do you think that they're going to make a move and try to grab somebody? Because it's not like they don't have assets that they could sell to maybe get in a big man to kind of fill that void until Mitchell's back.
They do. They have draft capital, like shockingly, even after all the moves that they've made, even acquiring Mikal Bridges, they still have their own picks. They got other teams' picks. Like, they've cleaned up their books pretty good, honestly, over the past 5 or 6 years. Yeah. So with Julius Randle, I would be weary of depending too much on him to play five.
Mm-hmm. Tibbs doesn't typically do that either. Like,
Tibbs like playing big, and Tibbs also wants to bludgeon you, which means those two things work in tandem. If I'm playing bigger than you, then that means I can beat you up. If I'm playing smaller than you, I'm at a size disadvantage. I don't think that's the way that Tibbs wants to play. And I think with Julius Randle coming off of a shoulder injury, which it takes guys a long time to believe it or not, those shoulder injuries are almost as tricky as hamstrings, almost as tricky as knee injuries for guys to come back from and to fully be themselves. Like, it took Paul George, I won't say a long time, but it took him a while to get fully comfortable back being himself after that shoulder injury. Do you want to put Julius Randle in that type of harm's way at that high of a level because you're going to exclusively play him at the five? I think they're going to search and scour the trade market to see if they could get something there. Now, we're going to take our last break. And when we come back with Dan Titus, I'm curious about some of these championship odds when we look back at last year and how that affects how Dan Titus looks at this year. Back here on A Good Word with Dan Titus. Dan, I look at last year's championship odds headed into the season. Out of the top 10 teams, right? This is what the money said. And Vegas always knows what the money said last year. Of the top 10 teams, only the Celtics advanced to the conference finals. The Nuggets, the Suns, the Bucks, those were 2, 3, and 4 in terms of championship odds headed into last season. And none of them teams was worth a damn when it actually counted. The Nuggets were the closest, but they burned out. The Suns got swept in the first round, and the Bucks went out meekly to the Pacers. Now, with that being said, do you look at the top odds headed into this season and see a similar sort of pattern forming?
I think that there's some mispriced options on this list. And I think that the number one team that stands out for me has got to be the Thunder. How are they beneath the Timberwolves, the Nuggets, the Knicks to make the conference finals? I mean, look at what the Thunder did. Who had a better offseason than the Thunder? They traded away Josh Giddey and got Alex Caruso, one of the best defenders in the league, all defensive team. Then you also get Isaiah Hartenstein there. You already had, you know, a team that went to the conference semifinals and wasn't that far away from the Western Conference Finals. This team is young, hungry. They filled the void of needing to fill that gap in the front court for rim protection, for rebounding. This squad is so deep. I'm just like, why would the books be so down on the Thunder at +900, man? Like, that's got to be the slam dunk bet to make the conference finals, because I just don't see – there's going to be some regression of the Dallas Mavericks, who had an improbable run. I like what they did in the offseason too, but, like, if you're just stacking up these rosters, man, you got to give me the Thunder here. And who knows what we'll see out of Minnesota. Minnesota's got – they also had another improbable run. Like, Anthony Edwards becoming the face of the league, but Karl Anthony Towns played well in the playoffs. He hasn't really done that before, so can he sustain what he was doing? All the Rudy Gobert chatter, like, I think he gets a lot of misplaced hate, but I just think that the Thunder roster is better.
I
say it is because, like, he's not like a scrub. Not everybody can be great at everything, right? But, like, he is still one of the best rim protectors in the game when he's actually playable. It just so happens that certain teams can scheme against him. Like, that's what you pay for. It happens. Some people get played off the court. Is he a four-time defensive player of the year? No, but he's still a really good player.
It's a tough one because I see the effect, and I think the problem is the eye test and the numbers with Rudy don't always match up. And then when you think of what you believe a defensive player of the year is supposed to be, you're thinking right. of lockdown defender. I don't need any help. Revis Island, you're shutting down that mm-hmm. shutting down one end of the floor. Like, hey, there's only a handful of those guys that ever play the freaking game, right? And the bigger part for Rudy is it's not defensively, because anybody can get cooked on the perimeter by Luka Doncic
right.
in the last few seconds of a game. Like, that happens to the best guys. I think the problem with Rudy is you're looking at him and you're saying, hey, if they're switching the small on you, you got to be able to take them down there and punish them. If not, then you can't be on the floor because your defensive efficiency is lessened as playoff series go on and teams start to, like you said, scheme you off the floor. Going back to Oklahoma City, I'm with you. The question was, pick one team from that list that you believe that will make the conference finals this year. And because I didn't say it out loud, here's the list of teams in order of top 10 in terms of championship odds. Celtics, Knicks, Nuggets, Timberwolves, Thunder, Mavericks, Bucks, 76ers, Warriors, Clippers, Lakers. I'm with you. I tend to believe the Thunder, it's the easy choice. It's almost lazy to say that the Thunder will make it, considering they had the best record in the West last year. Like you said, you shore it up on the floor, on ball defense with Alex Caruso. You added Hartenstein, who is an underrated hub as an offensive player. Like, you can give him the ball at the top of the key. Mm-hmm. You can run a lot of actions around him. He's a good decision maker. You can slide Chet Holmgren down to the four, where now he's a 7'3" power forward as opposed to a 7'3" center and a little light in the ass. He's still gonna be light in the ass at the four, but he's less light in the ass at four than he is at five. So you're thinking a little maturity there. You're thinking, you know, some experience. I'm very curious how all of that is going to work out. And of course, you know, Sam Presti's the mad scientist. He figures out everything. Mark Daigneault is a really good head coach. Now, amongst those teams that I named, pick one team from the list that you think will not make the conference finals this year. And put it like this, I chose a team that's not easy. You chose a team that's easy.
All right, let me see here. Yeah, I could flip it. Oh, actually, no, yeah, those are two probably pretty easy. So my choice is the Warriors, just because, like, they're having an identity crisis. Like, they got their aging Hall of Famer, one of the greats to ever do it. Who knows how many games Draymond Green will play this year. Hopefully he's got his attitude in check. I think he'll be better this year. But it's going to be hard for the Warriors to make the conference finals with Brandon Podziemski, De'Anthony Melton, Jonathan Kuminga. I have him as one of my breakouts. I think he's going to have a really good season, but I just don't think that it's going to be enough to ultimately get to the conference finals. Yeah, I don't have any spicy take there because, like, out of the list, like, I feel like it makes a lot of sense, like, where they have the odds at. Like, the Lakers don't have I don't think the Lakers are going to get there. Right. But I'm interested in your take on this one because I think maybe, and it's probably a callback to what I was saying earlier about fading Jamal Murray, but I don't know. Could there be something up in Denver now that, I don't know, we see this team start to kind of slide a little bit?
Yeah, that's the team that I picked, believe it or not, was the Denver Nuggets. Not because I don't believe in them as a franchise. I'm just looking at sort of the natural erosion. And by erosion, I mean, this is just a function of the collective bargaining agreement where mm-hmm. it becomes really hard for teams who have drafted well or acquired players well to have multiple players on max deals. You got Jokic on a max, and you've got Jamal Murray, who you just signed to a max. Remember, a couple years ago, before the CBA came in, and you were just sort of paying the levels of the luxury tax apron, which were punitive, but not as punitive as this, they re-signed Michael Porter Jr., who you would not necessarily call a max player. That, in turn, has caused them to lose Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and then Bruce Brown and Jeff Green. Like, you lose a little toughness and fabric of that on top of simply, y'all, we can't say that we love NBA parity. We can't sit up somewhere and say, man, we love the fact that we got six different champions in six different years. That means teams ain't repeating and teams ain't even getting back to the finals. Like, the Celtics might be the team best equipped to get back to the finals since those Golden State Warriors of Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant. But aside from that, teams don't get back. And because of all those very reasons, you start to take a slide down. A team that's not on the list that I'm very, very curious about, I would not bet on them, but I'm curious to watch them, is the Memphis Grizzlies. because you've got Ja Morant back, because he's learned to stay off of Instagram at least and not tell us what he's doing, like, I wonder
quiet.
If, yeah, he's been quiet. It's shocking, right? Shocking. I wonder if they're a team that, because we've forgotten about them, because they're still very young, they still got some pieces, they got some injury stuff to figure out, but Ja Morant, when he plays, is an MVP type of player. I wonder how that affects them crashing this party, because we didn't have to factor them in last year. Now we have to factor in them a little bit more this year, and they're still with young pieces whose trajectory are still going up.
Yeah, with the Grizzlies, man, I think that they're another mispriced team. Like, I think their market's set at 47.5 wins. To me, with being fully healthy, this could be a 50-win team. And I say that because, you know, to your point, Ja Morant has probably the most to prove at anyone this year. You know, he came back last year after the 25-game suspension, looked great. Then he messed up his shoulder. Hopefully, you know, it was, we were talking about earlier with Julius Randle and his potential shoulder and his, how he's coming back from his shoulder injury and how other players have come back from shoulder injuries. Hopefully that doesn't affect Ja Morant. I don't think it will. It doesn't look like it has, at least from the offseason workouts that I've seen him participate in. But then you're also getting Desmond Bain back. Knockdown three-point shooter, another improved defensive player as well. Jaren Jackson Jr. now can play that safety position now that Zach Edey's there playing the Steven Adams role. Mm-hmm. This team is going to be much better than people are anticipating. I think people just kind of forgot with after all the injuries, but they got a nice underdog in Vince Williams Jr. who stepped up and played a myriad of roles last year, and I think he could be a really good six-man piece for them. Marcus Smart was hurt.
Yeah.
This team is actually pretty deep. And when you look at how much volatility there is in the Western Conference, and now with news of the Clippers having to deal with Kawhi Leonard and, you know, the Warriors kind of fading and the Lakers just being the Lakers, I mean, outside of like Sacramento and Memphis, those are like the only two teams I'm seeing right now that are kind of ascending up the Western Conference that no one's really talking about.
No country for old men, but guess where they're going to have my ass? L.A. and San Francisco, baby, because them clicks be clicking. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is my man, Dan Titus. Thanks, Dan, for riding shotgun with me today, man. Appreciate you, bro.
No doubt, bro. Thanks for having me.
Hey, happy belated birthday once again. And for all those celebrating birthdays, celebrating their late 30s, enjoy it. That's all I'm going to say. Enjoy it. If you still have, you know, hair and you can get your dad by together, you know, you get your dad by together before you turn 40. That's all I'm going to say, man, because, you know, it goes downhill after that. At least that's from what I heard. But thanks to Dan Titus. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back. I guess I'll be back next week. I'm not in regular season mode, but I'll be back next week with another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.